This is Spotlight, Central Florida Public Media's arts, culture, and entertainment segment. I'm Nicole Darden Creston. The Spotlight is on now. A commemoration of 25 years since 9/11 at Rollins College will feature former U.S. Poet Laureate and author Billy Collins reading his poem, The Names. As Poet Laureate at the time of the attacks, he was commissioned to write the poem for a special joint session of Congress in New York the following year. He read it before the lawmakers of both chambers as part of the solemn ceremony in 2002.
And each had a name, Fiore, inscribed on a yellow petal, then Gonzalez and Hahn, Ishikawa and Jenkins. Names written in the air and stitched into the cloth of the day.
Friday night's community remembrance at Rollins College's Knowles Chapel, which also includes performances by the Bach Festival Choir and Orchestra and participation by city officials, will be one of only two other public occasions that Collins will read the names again. Now 85 years old, Collins recalls that when he was first asked to write a poem that could speak to a nation still reeling from the events of 9/11, his first response was no. He didn't think he could do it.
They asked me if, you know, you're a poet laureate, I'd like to be part of this, and can you, write a poem special to the occasion? Well, I don't know. You know my poems a little bit. I mean, they're not about national events. I don't chase the headlines. My poems are about walking the dog or eating an apple, looking out the window at a bird, those kinds of weighty matters. So I didn't think I could do it. I said that to them, and there was quite a long silence. And I broke it by saying, well, I'll show up, and I can find someone else's poem to read. I was thinking of Walt Whitman. And then we left it at that. And then one morning, I woke up 5 or something in the morning, and it must have been my mother's voice that said, get off the bench. So I figured out, lying in bed that morning, I figured out two things that enabled me to write it. One was I picked the genre of the elegy, so I made it a poem for the dead. And the other thing is I thought I could use the names of some of the dead alphabetically as kind of handholds to get me through the poem. So I had two restraints. And as you know, sometimes restraints lead to creativity. Yes. So I got up and wrote the poem pretty quickly.
It strikes me that you talked about how you write poetry about so-called ordinary things, about the beauty of ordinary moments. But that particular poem, the names are woven into those moments.
Fair enough, yeah.
It seems that you brought it into your sense of understanding and sharing poetry instead of you having to step out.
True enough. There are a number of little, almost one or two line scenarios of seeing the names on a poster, on a mailbox, the name being a monogram on a shirt collar, that kind of thing. That's a very good observation. I have not made that myself, actually. And then I kind of, if you will, name drop one name for each letter of the alphabet, except X. There's no one for X, so I put a parenthesis there, and the parenthesis is, let X stand, if it can, for those not found. And then I go back to the last few remaining letters of the alphabet. And it was very moving going to Ground Zero much later and actually finding the names carved there that had been in my poem.
Oh, my. I saw footage of you delivering that poem to the joint session of Congress. You see a young Chuck Schumer and a John McCain sitting at attention, and you could hear a pin drop in that room. There was a united sense of the weight of the moment. How did that feel to you?
Weighty. I mean, well, I was fairly nervous. I kind of kept it under control by, I don't know how, but...
You didn't look nervous, for the record.
I've seen myself, and I looked okay. Yeah, I mean, I think on stage, a person, an actor, can feel very nervous, but unless you break down and have a nervous breakdown, it really
Let's not do that.
Not picked up by the audience. Yes. Well, it was very odd. Before I read my poem to this joint session of Congress, there were a number of other speakers, of course. But what they had in common was they were talking political language, so a kind of, not to demean their talk, but it wasn't poetry. We were talking about freedom, about surviving, the strength of America, etc. I got up and read my poem. The beginning of the poem begins, like many poems do, with imagery. I'm lying there, so it's a very personal poem in a way. I'm lying there in the middle of the night, in the palm of the night, and it's raining out, and there's a glaze on the windows, and there's a wind, or a little wind. Well, the people in Congress were cocking their heads like border collies, because it's like, what is this? What is this? Political language does not begin with the moon and wind. And
true.
But I was using what I was doing poetry talk. We talk in images. But at that point, a number of them figured out, well, it's a poem. And then you put it very nicely. It appeared to me that some of them immediately lost interest because it was a poem, and others were pretty riveted, especially Pat Moynihan. So it was a different kind of language. But I think once the poem got traction, most people were with it.
It certainly seemed so.
Yeah.
Besides the obvious that we are marking the 25th anniversary, if you will, of this happening, do you think that there is something that we can learn from this commemoration? Do you think that there is some reflection that this can assist us in having?
Yeah, I wonder. It's one of those big and subjective questions that you'd have to take a poll in a way to get the honest answer.
Well, what would you like people to take away?
Well, one of the lessons that might be repeated here that was an immediate result of 9/11 was the lesson that poets have been ringing this bell ever since poetry began. And the bell is the bell of carpe diem, of seizing the day. We don't have much time. Our ground time will be brief, as one poet say, echoing the airline announcement. I remember a couple saying, we were going to get married like next year or something, and we're going to get married next month. So a lesson in the perishability of life.
So let's hop in a time machine and let's move to now. What are you doing right now, Billy Collins? I understand that you have a new book out.
Oh, yes. Well, this is what I usually write about. I do have a new book out. It just came out some months ago. And it's called Dog Show. And it's a collection of 25 poems about dogs, all written by me. And it's that's one unique thing about it for me. I've never written a whole book on one subject. And the other novel thing for me is that it's illustrated by a friend of mine who's a wonderful watercolorist and painter, Pamela Stibel. It's doing well because it appeals to people who like poetry and people who like dogs. I think the second is probably the larger audience, but there is a Venn diagram overlap there.
You are definitely speaking my language. I have two pugs and a Pekingese at home.
Good for you.
Would you mind reading us a piece from Dog Show?
Of course. Well, here's a fairly short poem. You know, one thing about dogs is that they die, is really, and I tried to stay away from that in the poem. It leads to sentimentality and grief, but dogs probably don't know they're going to die. That's another thing I was thinking about. But this dog, so this is a poem where we overhear a dog talking or thinking. This dog is very aware of its own mortality, which is a bit of a switch. It's called A Dog on His Master. As young as I look, I am growing older faster than he. 7-1 is the ratio they tend to say. Whatever the number, I will pass him one day and take the lead the way I do on our walks in the woods. And if this ever manages to cross his mind, it would be the sweetest shadow I have ever cast on snow or grass. Well, that's a pretty sensitive dog there. And the dog it reverses the situation. We wonder if dogs have a sense of mortality. And here the dog clearly does. And the dog is wondering if his master thinks about that.
Excuse me.
Okay. Now that's what it's supposed to do.
That is the one difficult thing about loving dogs.
Well, yeah, that's their only, their big flaw is that they check out before we do.
You can't help but love them.
Yeah, well, they say the dog, before the dog breaks your heart, the dog will enlarge it, if that is any consolation.
They also say it's an act of bravery to love
right,
a dog.
Right.
We talked before about how you felt specifically about the poem, The Names, and how for some time you did not put that particular poem in books, and you still do not read it very often. Can we talk about why?
Well, the poem is different from any other poem I've written. It's more serious, for one thing, and it tends to stir up the emotions of that horrifying event. And I was reluctant to make it just one of my poems. In those days, I was giving quite a few, a lot of public readings, and I didn't want to say, hey, this is a poem about a dog, and here's my next poem, I call The Names. It was just something, I didn't want to trivialize it. I didn't want to make it a regular poem. I thought it should be set aside in a glass case somewhere. I didn't want to just get it mixed in with the other poems. It's very special to me, and the occasion was really important to me, too.
What do you think the role of art is in helping to heal in situations that are so, frankly, just so large that it is difficult to get your arms around how you feel, how you experience those situations? What do you think the role of art is in processing that?
Well, that's one of those real big ones. Major league question. Let's reduce art to poetry if we can. I would say poetry did a much better job of stabilizing people's feelings in critically emotional moments when it was more formal poetry, when it had end rhyme after every end of every line, and it had a beat like iambic pentameter. If you have that kind of a stabilized rhythm and the reliable appearance of rhymes, the predictable and reliable appearance of rhymes, that takes you into, a predictable atmosphere. And that, I think, helps to stabilize or heal. But for the moment, you're in the arms of a poet who will you can depend on. A formal poet will never let you down. So when Frost says, whose woods these are, I think I know, his house is in the village, though, you know that pentameter line is going to continue. You know the rhymes are going to continue. And that also it encouraged you to accept the content better. Then poetry, I think, had a power to console and to ease the pain or to ease the joy. Poetry is good for moments of pleasure and celebration.
It strikes me that when you mention a predictable pattern like iambic pentameter, a particular beat, a rhyme, that in times of crisis, the predictable is necessary because it provides comfort.
Yeah.
You find comfort in things that make sense when a tragedy has suddenly turned the world upside down.
I think especially if it's a really good poem, because you get the sense that there's someone who is feeling it better than you are.
Or at least feeling it with you.
Feeling it at a higher level of articulation.
That was former U.S. Poet Laureate and author Billy Collins. I'm Nicole Darden-Creston. Thanks for listening to Spotlight.